coverage. Dak Prescott played well in that game against New England a month ago. But Tom Brady and his win against the Patriots, very average, very average. Justin Herbert played his worst game against the Patriots of the season. You've seen what he's been able to do ever since. But the truth of the matter is this. The Patriots right now, you can make a case that they are the most dangerous team in the AFC. Now, I get what they're saying about the Bills. The Bills' defense, nothing to sneeze at all. We all know what Josh Allen can do and what he's been able to do with that offense in Buffalo. But this is a compelling discussion that we're going to actually continue on the other side of this music break, because I think it's something that we actually, and when I say we, I'm talking about Patriot fans and even NFL fans, need to have a conversation about. Because as well as the Patriots are playing and have been playing over the last few weeks, it just seems like that they are still not getting the respect that they deserve. But after all, Bill Belichick knows better than anyone else in the NFL what to do with that. Use that as tool of motivation. This is what he do. This is what he does best. I mean, he knows what they're saying out there. He knows that there are people that are still doubting this team, that, oh, the Patriots, they can't beat, you know, elite quarterbacks like Mahomes or Josh Allen. I mean, Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. It's truly amazing when you talk about what he has been able to do so far, considering all things. Coming up next, we're going to continue this conversation because this is a conversation that we need to have. Because after all, the reality is going to be, oh man, what can this team do, big picture wise, should they get to the playoffs? Because I think that the Patriots are going to make the playoffs. But what can this team be once it gets there? We will have that conversation coming back after the music break. You're listening to the Shukri Wright Show right here on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Touch free from radio streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org.
Every day is
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Touch Free Farm Radio. Streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org. Glad to be here with you on this Monday night, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Thank you for making this program part of your Monday as well. Call in the program at 855-915-WMFO. 855-915-9636. That's the phone number to call in. And I'll be the first to tell you, it's been a lot of football this entire show so far. I mean, although I typically plan what I'm going to talk about and so forth, but I didn't know that this conversation was going to lead me down this path. But hey, when you talk football on a sports talk show, you can never, ever go wrong. I mentioned in my tease on Twitter that I was going to talk about, you know, some Bruins as well, and as well as some Red Sox notes. I will, a little later in the hour. So if you tune in just to hear me talk some Bruins and whatnot, I will. I will get to that. In fact, I'll get to that like in the next segment and so forth. Now, for now, Patriots. Are they the most dangerous team in the AFC? Are they the team that teams across the AFC and the NFL should fear? Frankly, yes. Because when I think of success in the NFL, it always comes down to coaching. And no team has greater advantage at head coach than the Patriots with Bill Belichick. That's just the fact. Say what you will. And I'm serious. Say what you will. But the truth is that when you talk about when you talk about the Patriots, you talk about where they are and what they have become. This is something in which that I absolutely think that when you look at where this team is and what they have become and what they have been able to string together. Exactly what is exactly not to like? I mean, when you talk about when you talk about where this team has come from the beginning of the season, where we were wondering, is Mac Jones, you know, the right pick over Cam Newton, and to the defense, were they able to be able to like, you know, put pieces together? Were they going to be able to figure out, you know, some of their problems late in games and so forth? And I do think that a lot of those questions have, in fact, been answered. But according to some national pundits, this hasn't been the case. Dan Orlovsky on First Take this morning on ESPN share his thoughts on the Patriots in the AFC. And then followed by Stephen A.
Lamar has that special little thing.
Yes, Lamar is special, no doubt. I think the thing that makes New England indifferent to me, or very different than me compared to the other teams, I think they got the best offensive line in the AFC right now. Mm-hmm. Their offensive line. The Cleveland Browns came into yesterday's game with the number one pass rush unit in the NFL. Mm-hmm. They pressured Mac Jones 3 times. I think that the Patriots' offensive line is rounding in to be just as good as their defense. And I don't think anybody in the AFC has that. And I will push back on you with this. We got to stop saying Mac Jones' best thing is he doesn't hurt the football team.
Right.
Maybe the kid's just really freaking good.
No, I've always liked Mac Jones coming out of Alabama. Remember?
But we can't say the best thing is he doesn't hurt the football team. The best thing he does is he knows exactly where to go with the football, and he knows exactly when to throw the football, and he knows how to throw the football, and he's wildly accurate, and he plays incredibly fast. Like, all the things that matter the most to quarterback play, he does really good.
Well, you can say that. My retort.
You know, that on that point right there, I'm like, I'm with Dan Orlovsky on this one. He doesn't hurt the team. Have you not been watching? He doesn't hurt the team, but get it right. He knows what he's doing out there. Yes, going into yesterday's game, he had 2 lackluster performances. He's a rookie. Rookies are going to have bad games. Mac Jones had his fair share of bad games. He's a rookie. But when you look at the big body of work so far this season, Mac Jones has not been the reason why the Patriots were struggling early on. Mac Jones was not the reason why that this team was having problems not turning over the football. Mac Jones was not the reason why the defense could not get a big stop late in games on third down. Mac Jones was the reason why the Patriots were able to be in those close games late in games. Most notably, go back to the Dallas game. He throws that pick six. What does he do on the very next drive? Throw a 75-yard touchdown bomb down the field to tie the game. Again, your quarterback keeping you in those games. So, seriously, do me this favor. Stop saying that he doesn't hurt the team. It sounds like, to me, when you say that as a fan, what it ultimately sounds like is someone who is basically trying to limit him and pigeonhole him into saying, well, he's not going to hurt you, but he's not going to help you either. That's exactly what it sounds like. More from Dan Orlovsky.
Short to that would be if you've got an offensive line that's protecting you and you have a running game that buffers your offense. Those are two components that are incredibly pivotal to assisting a quarterback, particularly sure. a young quarterback yeah. that's yeah. learning a new system that you're bringing along slowly. You said yourself weeks ago, they don't make things too complicated for Mac Jones. They're bringing them along slowly.
Right.
And you're seeing elevation, but it's relatively incremental from the standpoint that you're not asking him to do but so much. I'm saying to you, your points are valid, but they would be even more substantive if he didn't have a stout offensive line
right.
or a running game to buffer right. that. But when you've got to worry about those two things, that definitely does help him now.
And that's a great point. It's a great point. But that's the one reason that I say I'm not ready to make him the most dangerous. Because, yeah, they have all of that. But when it comes to explosiveness, I don't see those guys on the outside that they have. Now Bourne has been playing great football, great football.
Yes, he has.
Been going up and making some plays. And those guys outside have been making plays. But I don't know if I can say with those guys that you have on the outside and you're down 14.
Right, we got a question, so but I see you champing at the bit over here.
You can't say that. And then we have data of a Ben Roethlisberger doing the same thing as a young player. Or Russell Wilson doing the same thing as a young player. Look at what those guys became. They had great offensive lines. They ran the ball well right. and had really good defenses.
But
and they became great
but players. I'm not questioning what Mac Jones is going to be.
Right.
Hold on, let's not get
Tom
it twisted.
Started that
let's
way.
Not get
right.
it twisted. I'm not questioning what Mac Jones is going to be. I believe in the brother.
Or what he's
I
right now. Have.
But what I'm saying to you is that right now, he's helped along by a lot. When you give me an offensive line and you give me a running game, and you give me exceptional coaching, and you give me an opportunistic defense, I'm surrounded
okay, but
by complimentary pieces.
That's he's what
he's
saying.
He's saying his whole.
And that's the key. When you're surrounded by complementary pieces, a great offensive line, you got a strong run game, it makes life a hell of a whole lot easier. When you don't have those things, go ask Trevor Lawrence down in Jacksonville. It's hard. You have to carry the weight. It's not a coincidence that quarterbacks that have that early in their careers, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, and then Ben Roethlisberger, again, when they were young, early in their careers, you think of Ben Roethlisberger. I'm going to take it quarterback by quarterback. Start with the Pittsburgh Steelers in the early mid-2000s, 2004, 2005. Pittsburgh, strong offensive line, solid run game with Willie Parker and Jerome Bettis. That helped Ben Roethlisberger tremendously, especially his rookie year 2004. Seattle, Russell Wilson, strong offensive line, great run game with Marshawn Lynch. Helped take some of the pressure off Russell Wilson. Tom Brady, his first 3-4 years in New England. Solid, very solid offensive line. Good run game. Like, this is exactly what Mac Jones has in New England right now. Good run game. Damien Harris didn't play yesterday. no problem. Ramondre Stevenson stepped up big time. And you saw what you were able to get from the run game. And I'll be the first to tell you, this is nothing new in the NFL. So let's stop pretending that rookie quarterbacks are supposed to carry the team by themselves. That's not realistic at all. It's not real. That doesn't happen. Like, let's not kid ourselves with the whole idea that, oh, perhaps that this is a team and this is a young quarterback that's supposed to have it all figured out, have it all, like, sorted out and carry the offense by himself. That's not real life. That's not reality. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but here to tell you the truth. If you got any thoughts, call in at 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. If you want to talk to me, call me. Phone lines are open. But we are going to step aside. Coming up next, right here on the Shukri Wright Show, we're going to talk Bruins. Look back on the weekend that was. So if you want to talk some Bruins, that's going to be coming up next. Keep it locked in right here. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford.
Midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. Stenches in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Hi, my name is Will Wiesenfeld. I'm back, and you're listening to WMFO Bedford.
Vicky, how you doing? How's the knee?
It's coming along, doctor, but still some soreness.
Well, let's see. You know, this soon after surgery, some pain is pretty normal.
I was hoping to get more painkillers. The first round worked great.
We're being very careful with those now. Prescription painkillers are opioids, same as heroin. It's easy to start taking them, not so easy to stop.
Last year in America, an average of 40 people died from opioid abuse every day. Long-term addiction has become America's newest health epidemic.
So no pills?
Vicky, you're doing great. So let's try these anti-inflammatories, plus your physical therapy. If the soreness doesn't continue to get better, give me a call.
For opioids, the smaller the dose prescribed and taken, the better. Because even a few prescription painkillers can sometimes go a long, wrong way. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the Orthopedic Trauma Association. Visit orthoinfo.org/prescription safety.
Welcome back to the Strictly Right Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Touch Reform Radio. Streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org. Glad you're able to tune into the program today. Call in, talk to me. I'm here for just under a half hour remaining on this Monday night. Call me at 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636 is the telephone number to get a hold of me. And we're going to spend this segment talking about the Bruins and the weekend that was. We spent the first, the first hour and a half talking football and more football, which is great. Because, I mean, we're in the middle of football season, but, I mean, Bruins hockey season is already also underway as well. So we can't neglect them, you know. You know what I'm saying? So with that being said, the Bruins played back-to-back games this weekend. And there was a couple of things that really stood out to me when it came to the Bruins this past weekend that I really liked. One of which kind of raised an eyebrow, you know, a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like, one of them was Jeremy Swayman playing back-to-back games. That really was surprising, to say the least. No, it was. Because, number one, in the NHL, you don't see goalies playing back-to-back games anymore. You just don't. Like, the days of goalies playing, 60 games a season and the backup playing only 22, that's long gone. It's basically your starter plays 42 to 45 games, then your backup plays, 37 games and so forth, in an effort to keep your starting goaltending fresh for the playoffs. So when you see Swayman getting the knob last night against the Montreal Canadiens at home at the Garden, that should tell you one and one thing and one thing only, and that is your guy moving forward. That is your starting goaltending. Why does that not sound surprising? Because frankly, I've been chomping at the bit at the fact that Swayman should be the guy starting, not Linus Ullmark. But I was trying to be patient and trying to be accepting of the fact that there was a reason why that Linus Ullmark was brought here. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that you completely discard the guy and that this guy is, you know, he's no good, he sucks, and so forth. No. But what I am going to do is bring this thought to life and simply tell you the following. The Bruins, without openly admitting it, made a mistake in signing Ullmark. Not based on performance, but based on salary cap. I'm going to tell you why. Because if you think about this for a moment, if you think about the fact that the Bruins went out and they signed him to what, that five-year deal, was it like $5.5 million per season? Roughly that number? Yeah. I said it at the time, and I was like, I don't like the contract. I don't hate the move, but I don't like the term. You're going to go ahead and give a guy who has he's never started more than, what, 30-plus games in a season in his NHL career? Not once. Not once. You give him that kind of workload, and he'll break down. You're going to give him that kind of workload. Meanwhile, you have a young, and I get it, an unproven goalie in Swayman that we saw in short spurts last season, that this guy is going to be the guy moving forward for the future for the Boston Bruins. Cool. Great. But here's the thing. Even if the Bruins decided that they're not going to, you know, have him start all that often moving forward, and I'm not saying that you're going to bench him entirely. No. He'll still play like roughly, I say, if the Bruins are playing three or four times, I say four times for argument's sake, in a given week, I think it's fair to say that Linus Ullmark is going to play maybe one or if not two at most. And Swayman will play the other games. But the fact that Swayman was playing in back-to-back games for the first time was like okay, I see. You don't do that unless you're telling me and you're telling everyone else around you that Jeremy Swayman is the starting goaltender moving forward. That's not a move that you're just going to make, well, because I was just feeling how he performed in New Jersey on Saturday against the Devils, so he's going to get another start. No, this is a nonverbal signal to the team that Swayman's the guy moving forward. That's exactly what it was. So if you ask me what the biggest surprise for me over the weekend for the Bruins, it was Swayman starting back-to-back games. That really was the biggest story. But on the other side of it, and we got to talk about this, is what exactly was the point of the Bruins giving Linus Ullmark that kind of money? Like, seriously, what was the point? Was it because you expected that he was going to be the guy, and the contract was actually 4 years, $20 million, $5 million average annual value? Like, goodness smokes. $5 million for a guy who's pretty much going to be backing up Jeremy Swayman, and that same $5 million could have potentially been used to improve other areas of the team. Brutal. Absolutely brutal. If you got any thoughts on the Bruins, I'm talking about the Bruins now. Call me at 855-915-WMFO. 855-915-9636. 855-915-9636 is the number to reach me. That's the reason why I'm bringing this up. Because we could talk about Swayman clearly looking like he is the guy, and in my mind, he is the starting goaltender for the Boston Bruins. Meanwhile, they're admitting, without admitting, that giving Omark this contract was a mistake. Let's not kid ourselves. Like, seriously. Let's not kid ourselves into thinking that Omark was worth the $5 million per season that the Bruins gave him. He wasn't. And I like the guy. It's nothing personal. But if we're going to be completely honest about something here, this is just another example of Bruins' gross management of the salary cap. And I know I'm coming across as rather a bit harsh, but I got to keep it real. I got to keep it real. And I cannot sit here and sugarcoat the truth of the matter. Also, I should also add that the Boston Bruins, they, last night, they really got some really good signs. Tom in North Carolina called into the show earlier this evening. And the thing that I talked about with him, and I'm going to talk about now, is the fact just how important it was that Charlie Coyle and Charlie McAvoy scored 2 goals apiece. That was huge. And then the fifth goal, obviously, was the goal that was scored, the empty netter by Taylor Hall. So with that being said, how important was those goals for Charlie McAvoy and Charlie Coyle? Oof. Where do I start? Let's start with the fact that, number one, Charlie Coyle, you need more out of. Because this is now the worst kept secret in the NHL when it comes to the Boston Bruins. The worst kept secret is the fact that if the top line is not scoring, you lose. We have 3 years of proof of that. If the top line is not clicking on all cylinders, not firing on all cylinders offensively, this team is done. Second line, and I talked about it last week on Thursday night, I absolutely annihilated. I absolutely annihilated the Bruins' second line, third line, and fourth line, but predominantly this entire secondary scoring unit. Because you were getting absolutely nothing. And Charlie Coyle comes up big last night. And you need to see this a hell of a whole lot more. Why? Because you're paying this guy a lot of money. And you don't want to pay him a lot of money to absolutely be a freaking passenger. That I would absolutely hate. Like, seriously. Like, the more I think about it, the more it gets me aggravated. Because, frankly, This is not the kind of offense you're getting from a guy for a center guy who is getting paid what $5.25 million per season over the course of the next 6 years? No, absolutely not. That's not the kind of money that you're paying a guy to underperform offensively. So last night was absolutely huge. Huge. If Charlie Coyle can ever figure it out and put it all together and be more consistent scoring offensively and being a factor for this team can win. But man, they needed Charlie Coyle, and they needed Charlie Coyle to step up huge, and did he ever last night against the Montreal Canadiens. Now, oh, Charlie McAvoy. Charlie McAvoy, how are you doing? Those 2 goals that he scored last night, massive. Because let's face it, we all know that McAvoy is a terrific all-around defenseman. No questions asked. No question. However, and I do mean however, the truth is, when you talk about the need for a secondary scoring on this team, we're not talking about the fact that Charlie McAvoy has not contributed offensively. And that's the only criticism that I had of Charlie McAvoy going into last night's game. That was the only one. That was it. The one criticism, what has he done to contribute offensively to the power play? Nothing. What does he do? What has he done to contribute on 5-on-5 as a defenseman? Nothing. Last night changed all of that. Hopefully, moving forward. And that is what you saw. We know that he's a physical defenseman, very physical, very strong defenseman. We know that he can back check. We know that this is a guy that's not afraid to get nasty, to play with another level of nasty on the ice. I'm not worried about that. My concern is, you talked about McAvoy taking reins as the number one defenseman. You need him to contribute offensively because he is that gifted of a defenseman. The guy is a shutdown defenseman, but you also need him to produce offensively as well. Can he take that step this year? That remains to be seen. But last night, ooh, great sign. Great sign. And maybe Bruce Cassidy pulled him aside and told him, listen, we need you to jump into plays in the offensive zone. You saw that last night. McAvoy jumping into plays, taking over plays. And this is what you needed. You needed to see that. Big win for the Boston Bruins last night as they are now on another vacation. Isn't that quite lovely that we're so used to the Bruins going on these 4 or 5 days of no hockey games to be played. The next one that we play, it'll be 10 years from now. Oh, they play last night. When's the next game? Oh, that's right. It won't be for another 3 years. What? What the hell is this? I'm being facetious as I say that. By the way, their next game is on Saturday night in Philadelphia against the Flyers. And then, oh, by the way, they have another back-to-back as well next weekend. They got the Flyers on Saturday night, and then they got the Flames at home next Sunday against the Calgary Flames. Huh. How do you like those apples? How do you like those apples? So the Bruins, they win back-to-back games against the Devils, and they also win the game last night against the Montreal Canadiens, and they got a whole nother week to wait around until the next two games. Comedy. Absolutely comedy. Coming up next, we have a little bit more left to get into in terms of the program. So we are going to talk about the Boston Red Sox because a couple of pieces of news broke today that I want to have an opportunity to break into and really, you know, share with you my thoughts. Coming up next right here on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, South Sweet Farm Radio.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, Tush, Free Farm Radio. Streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org. The number to call me is 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. As we are now officially in the last few minutes of the program, and I just want to share with you a couple of Red Sox related thoughts first and foremost. I got to start with this particular news that broke today. In case if you didn't hear the news about Julio Lugo, 12-year Major League Baseball veteran and a key member of the 2007 Boston Red Sox team that won the World Series, he has passed away, sadly, today at the age of 45. And I just wanted to take the time to really just give my condolences to the Lugo family and everyone who knew him and who either knew him and played alongside with him in the majors and so forth or had any sort of connection with him. My condolences goes out to you. It's a tough loss for sure. You know, when people talk about Julio Lugo, they remember the Mother's Day miracle, of course. And this one particular play, moment, really basically is one of the big standout moments from that 07 season, in which that there was a lot of magical moments for sure, no question. But for Julio Lugo, this was definitely a big moment as part of that championship season. And this was against the Baltimore Orioles, as it looked like. So here we go.
A 3-2 pitch. Lugo chops it right side. Millar's going to need help over his Ray. The play, no! Here comes another run. Red Sox win! Veritek in, Hitzke in. Boston comes all the way back. A sixth run ninth. Little ground ball toward first base. You knew it was going to be close because of the speed of Lugo. The throw is going to be on target. They're going to give an error to the first to the pitcher covering first base. The throw's a little bit behind him, but he takes his eye off the ball to pick up the bag. Once it gets by him, two runs come across. What an inning for the Red Sox.
That was Julio Lugo. That was back from May 13th, 2007. One of the many magical moments the Red Sox had during their championship season of 2007. Julio Lugo, again, passed away earlier today. The news broke at the age of 45. He will be missed very dearly. In continuation with the Boston Red Sox, for those who have not heard the news by now, Eduardo Rodriguez has signed a 5-year deal, $77 million, with the Detroit Tigers. And frankly, if I was a Red Sox fan, I'm not even upset with Chaim Bloom for not even offering him that kind of money. My reason is simple. He is too inconsistent. Too inconsistent. And for the Red Sox to even offer him that kind of money, what, $15 million per season? Is something that I just feel as if that this is absolutely way, 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 way too much for a guy who, I get it, yeah, he won you 19 games and so forth in 2019, but the truth is you have not been able to get that kind of consistency again. And it really was, it really was one of those things in which that I do believe the Red Sox, they got it right on this one. They absolutely got it right. Does that create a new opportunity in terms of the rotation for the Red Sox? Absolutely. Because this does now create question marks as to what is their plan moving forward for the rotation for 2022. And I'm sure that Red Sox fans remember the afternoon of July 31st, 2014, in which that Eduardo Rodriguez was part of a trade with the Baltimore Orioles for reliever Andrew Miller, who was just months away from entering free agency. And also that same year, the Orioles were a playoff team. They were looking for bullpen help, and they got that help. Eduardo Rodriguez was part of that deal, and that's how he ended up with the Red Sox. He was 21 years old at the time. So it's unfortunate that that Rodriguez is gone. But I definitely do think that this was the right move in letting Erod walk. I really do. And I get that the Red Sox, they extended Rodriguez an $18.4 million qualifying offer back on November 7th. But he wanted to test free agency and see what he was going to be able to get. So he got money from the Tigers. He got paid. So it is what it is. In that regard, it just is. But I also do wonder, though, in terms of what will they do in terms of the rotation this offseason? What are their plans? What are they going to do? Because right now, these are the only three names that we know that's going to be a part of the Red Sox rotation in 2022. Chris Sale. You'll have a full offseason, regular offseason, and what? How many years? About maybe 3 4 years? 3 years? Yeah. Nathan Eovaldi and Nick Pivetta. That's it. But as far as the remainder of the rotation, the final two spots, I mean, we'll see what happens in terms of Tanner Houck and as well as Garrett Whitlock. If those two will be able to be penciled in for the final two spots of the Red Sox rotation in 2022, but we'll see. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens and so forth. Last note, Celtics. The Celtics are freaking killing me. They're absolutely killing me, man. Like, they blow a 19-point lead Saturday night, and it really is more of the same for the Boston Celtics in terms of just the overall makeup. Tatum wants to be the guy so bad, and I get that Jaylen Brown didn't play. But for goodness sakes, if you want to be an impact type of player, you got to make clutch shots. That's just the truth. You have to make clutch shots in clutch moments. 9 seconds left. Pull-up jumper. You can't even make the two-pointer. It's the kind of thing that just makes me wonder, like what is the mental makeup of this team? But that's just a quick thought on the Celtics. They're actually about to play a game in just a moment against the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight at 7 o'clock. But for now, that is going to wrap it up for the Shukri Wright Show right here on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Before I log off officially, I'm going to play you one more PSA for the top of the hour. And this is Shukri Wright signing off. It's been a blast being here doing the show. As always, I will talk to you again during my regular slot next Monday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Follow me on social media at Shukri Wright, at S-H-U-K-R-I-W-R-I-G-H-T-S. Instagram at SWrightsRadio underscore SWrightsRadio underscore. That's how you can follow me on social media. Thanks for listening to the program. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tusk Free Form Radio. I'll talk to you again next Monday. Peace.
Pop quiz. Which is more dangerous, alcohol or marijuana? Study after study, the science shows that alcohol causes much more harm to the user and to society than marijuana. So why do colleges punish students more harshly for getting caught with cannabis? Join Students for Sensible Drug Policy and give your college administrators a simple pharmacology 101 lesson. Visit www.schoolsnotprisons.com to find out if there's a chapter at your school or how to start one.
Of the pie. Now you can't sleep, so you don't.